I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. A caravan of around 2,000 migrants is now gathering in a Mexican border town in the hope of entering the United States. They'll attempt to cross from Piedras Negras in Mexico to Eagle Creek, Texas. It's the first time a large group of migrants has come to the border with Texas instead of California. They're in a temporary shelter guarded by military police in riot gear. One Honduran man, Miguel Sanchez, says he's determined to enter the U.S. in search of a better life.
I think Trump's got it wrong. He's not okay in the head. We come to find work, but he thinks that because there are gangs in Central America that we come here to commit crime. But no, that's not why we're here. We come to work and to do our best. And even if he puts up his wall, that's not going to stop us.
We've reported many times on the so-called migrant caravans from Central America and on unaccompanied minors crossing from Mexico into the U.S. Last fall, The World's Monica Campbell set out to get an up-close and personal look at what it's like to experience migration like that by following one family for months. We're devoting the rest of our show today to that story of one boy and his mom and their journey. Monica's reporting is in collaboration with our partners at PBS Frontline and their podcast, The Frontline Dispatch.
It's November, and I'm crossing the border into Tijuana. I'm looking for a kid I'd heard about from El Salvador who came up in the migrant caravan. He's 15 and alone and waiting for a chance to enter the U.S. and ask for asylum. There's a U.S. helicopter overhead and Mexican soldiers and police around. And there's this plaza, and a group of migrants are gathered around a man with a notebook. He's calling out numbers from the notebook. It's a way of creating a line of sorts for the thousands of migrants here. If your number's called, you can go up to the border to U.S. officials and ask for asylum. But the kid I'm looking for, his name's Vladdy, isn't here. He can't come here. If he does, Mexican officials can pick him up and even deport him because he's a teenager on his own without papers. So he avoids this place. He's holed up in a shelter nearby.
So I'm heading to the youth shelter where Vladdy is staying.
The shelter's a small concrete building on a busy street. It's just 10 minutes from the border. I find Vladdy in the courtyard hanging out.
Mucho gusto. It's nice to meet you. Un gusto conocerle. ¿Cómo va?
He's slim with brown eyes, wearing a gray sweatshirt, basketball shorts. He's got a baseball hat, one of those flat-brimmed ones turned to the side. The clothes are all donated, but he likes them. They're trendy street clothes. This shelter's for teenagers like him. Many of them came up in the same caravan he did. He shows me around.
Area for taking a shower and washing up. There's a small garden, there's a parking lot.
And there are certain rules here he's got to follow.
No smoking.
Consumir bebidas alcohólicas.
No alcohol.
Hay una hora límite para regresar a las 6:30 cuando uno está lejos. Ya si uno quiere
salir. By 6:30, if they want to go out, they need to ask permission.
The rules are no joke. This part of Mexico can be dangerous. It's no place for a kid like Vladdy on his own. A couple of weeks after I meet him, two kids staying at the same shelter were found murdered not far away. Their bodies were found on the side of the road. But El Salvador wasn't safe either. He starts telling me why he left.
Porque fui amenazado por las pandillas.
He says because he was threatened by the gangs.
Ya uno que ya tiene 14, 15 años así ya corre peligro, porque ya las pandillas lo piensan a querer involucrar, a lo quieren poner a postear cosas así, pues.
He said that when you turn 14 or 15 where he lives in El Salvador, then you're ready to be recruited, you feel that pressure to be recruited, and that's just a fact of life of where he lives. ¿Y qué más?
Y pues empieza a amenazarnos que va a matar a nuestra familia si no nos unimos o si no nos mata a nosotros.
He says that they'll start to threaten, that they were threatening us, they said they would kill us, kill out my family if we didn't join them.
Y pues,
but he didn't join the gang. His mom told him to join the migrant caravan instead. So he left El Salvador, along with his grandmother, who went with him as far as Tijuana.
Pues los primeros dos días que empezamos a caminar.
This is the first few days walking were some of the toughest.
Pues yo traía un par de zapatos de Salvador, pero ya los boté porque se me arruinaron. De ahí, tercer par de zapatos y pues contando unas chinas sería cuarto.
So he's on his fourth pair of shoes.
It was scary at times. At one point, a man from Honduras hitched a ride on a crowded truck and fell off and died. The caravan gained momentum as it moved north. People kept joining, many of them planning to seek asylum in the U.S. And it all blew up in the news. President Trump started tweeting about it and said he'd send troops to keep the migrants out.
I'm not letting them in. They're not coming in. All right? They're not coming in. We're going to do whatever we have to. They're not coming in.
Vladdy knows what the president is saying about the migrants.
Pues eso es discriminación, pues lo que está haciendo el presidente de los Estados Unidos. Él es hijo de, creo que su madre era emigrante. Y pues,
he says it's discrimination. He says Trump. He says that Trump also comes from a family of immigrants, that his wife is an immigrant. But Vladdy's still determined to cross the border and enter the U.S. Someone's waiting there for him. His mom. I meet his mom, Veronica Aguilar, at the house she's staying in near San Francisco with a couple who took her in. She fled El Salvador a year before Vladdy did.
A causa del papá de mi hijo, yo ya había tenido problemas con las pandillas desde que yo decidí dejar de ir a verlo a la al penal o a la detención.
Vladdy's dad was in prison for murder. He was in a gang. She tried to cut off ties with him, but he said, "You're being disloyal and keeping my son from me."
Ellas tienen que ir o las matan, porque ellos, los pandilleros, casi la mayoría que están detenidos, tienen obligadas a sus mujeres, aunque ellas no quieran ir.
She says if you're with a gang member who's locked up, you've got to stick with them or else, like being married to the mob. One time, she was walking home and this guy stopped her and said, "Put out your hand." And he put three bullets in her palm and said they'd be used to kill her.
Fue un día que me pusieron la pistola en la cabeza.
She said at one point, someone came and put a gun to her head on the street.
It's one bad thing after another. I read her asylum application later and realize she didn't even tell me about one of those prison visits when Vladdy's dad got angry and threw her and kicked her in the ribs. She says the prison guard just stood there. But she built a life of her own, too, and made ends meet.
Trabajé en un super.
She worked at a supermarket and sewed tights in a factory. And she was really into lifting weights. She showed me this video where she's at this competition. She's petite but strong, wearing black shorts and hot pink sneakers. And you see her prep herself to lift this huge barbell. Life's so different now in California, and Vladdy's not here with her. It's unthinkable sometimes, but she always meant to send for him once she figured out a place for them to live. When she crossed the border, she was detained for 7 months, but as soon as she got out, she started thinking about getting Vladdy here. When she heard about the big migrant caravan, she told him to join it.
Sí, la veía como una opción.
It'd be safer with a group of migrants and not a smuggler. But she still worried about him the whole time.
Todos los días. Todos los días.
¿En un día cuántas veces?
Cuatro o cinco veces.
No más que podía.
Y estaba escribiendo, ¿dónde están? Cuando tenían señal me contestaban. Cuando no era horrible porque yo estaba, Dios mío, ¿cómo estará?
They talked 4 or 5 times every day. If he didn't call, she tried not to panic. She was really anxious when Vladdy crossed into Mexico from Guatemala on a raft made of tires and wood. When he finally reached the U.S. border, she was relieved, but knew it'd be harder for him to get across. It was getting tougher. The week we meet, U.S. Border Patrol agents tear gas migrants on the border. President Trump sent troops there. And thousands of migrants in the caravan Vladdy came up in were stuck in Mexico.
Y es muy preocupada, un dolor en mi pecho, de saber dónde estaba mi hijo, de cómo estaba, si ya había comido.
Veronica says her chest physically hurts, wondering how he's doing, whether he's eaten. She hasn't seen him since she left El Salvador more than a year ago.
Tengo fe en Dios que todo va a estar bien. Solo hay que saber esperar.
I have faith in God, it'll all be fine. I just have to wait. Back in Tijuana, people are mobilizing to help migrants like Vladdy. Not far from his shelter, there's a building filled with volunteers. People are hauling donated water bottles, tents, and tampons.
Okay. Fourth floor?
I'm looking for a lawyer named Nicole Ramos. She's connecting other lawyers to migrants.
How do you explain what you're doing here?
We're essentially doing legal triage. We are providing refugees with information about the U.S. legal system.
I ask about Vladdy.
He's 15 years old. He's here alone. His mom is in the United States. What are some of the scenarios that he faces?
He would attempt to present himself at the port of entry where
in Tijuana,
where you would enter the United States at the San Ysidro port of entry. He would get to the gate, and most likely he would be met by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officers who would then turn him away.
She's trying to prevent that. I ask Ramos why she thinks the government is pushing back so hard at the border.
Because the U.S. government simply does not want any more immigrants.
The Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Protection declined my interview requests. But I talked to Andrew Arthur, a former immigration judge, about all this. He has a different take on why people are being turned away. He says it's about capacity.
There's a physical constraint, a space constraint. The ability to actually build additional screening areas would be a significant undertaking. And so you can send more asylum officers down there, but you're just not going to have the space capacity in order to screen those individuals at the ports of entry.
I bring up Vladdy and how his family's threatened by gangs.
He needs to resist that. He needs to go to the police and tell the police about the harm that he's suffered.
Oftentimes they say, you hear the police are involved with the gangs themselves and that the police won't help. What would you say to him then?
Then you'd go to a higher level police officer or alternatively seek relocation within the country.
Vladdy and his mom did move to another part of El Salvador, though, and they say they still weren't safe, which is why he's here in Tijuana. For now, Vladdy's killing time at the shelter until the lawyers say it's time to cross. He's playing with this kitten the kids here rescued off the street.
Migra.
Migra. A ver, di algo. Di algo, pues, di algo.
He's on his phone a lot, playing games and watching videos.
Uno se llama Clash of Clans, el otro Free Fire. Y también me gusta ver videos en Facebook. Son anime, se llama más, sí.
¿Qué tipo de videos en Facebook? What kind of videos do you like to watch on Facebook?
Se llaman anime, son como caricaturas.
¿De Japón?
Sí. Oh. Son japoneses.
He's really into the Japanese anime videos.
After dinner one night, Vladdy and I talk about the future.
When you think of the United States, what do you think of?
Pues es un país grande y poderoso y lleno de inmigrantes. Y pues Estados Unidos, yo diría que no es lo que
es.
Gracias solo a los.
That the United States is a big country and it's a country of immigrants.
La economía de ahí porque.
I ask him how he pictures life if he makes it to the U.S.
Quiero estudiar porque el estudio lo es todo.
He says he'll go to high school.
Tenía que tener buenas notas o si no el teléfono me lo quita.
I have to get good grades or my mom will take away my cell. I believe it from getting to know Veronica. She's tough. But he wants to see her more than anything after more than a year apart.
Es mi mamá y que siempre va a hacer falta eso, sí. Ella siempre me ha cuidado bastante y pues me hace bastante falta.
Claro. He says he's looking forward to seeing his mom, giving her a hug, living with her again.
That evening, one of Vladdy's friends pulls him aside, this young guy from Honduras. He takes out this little plastic bag with a metal chain inside.
It's a cross on the end of his chain. His friend's putting it on him.
It looks like a blessing. His friend says Vladdy will need all the luck he can get to make it to the U.S. Back in California, Veronica gets the news that Vladdy's made it through. U.S. officials call from the border. Your son is here with us.
Ya me llamaron para comunicarme con él, ya hablé con él.
She said she is so much more relaxed to know that he's here in the United States. They've spoken. He said he's fine.
And now she waits to see when he'll be released from the holding cell at the border. I call a few days later to see if she's heard from him again.
Aquí sigo esperando. No.
Wow, hoy es día tres?
No, no word. Veronica says she was told maybe it'd take a week for a call. More days pass.
We're listening to a story by the world's Monica Campbell. It's about a 15-year-old boy from El Salvador named Vladdy making his way to the U.S. to be with his mom in California. Where we left off, Vladdy's mom, Veronica, knew he was in U.S. custody, but she hadn't heard from him.
I check in with Veronica again.
We know where he is?
Sí. Se encuentra en Miami, Florida.
In Miami?
Sí.
¿Y cómo está?
Lejos, ¿verdad?
Veronica laughs because it's so absurd to her that she's in California and now Vladdy's in Florida, ping-ponging around the country. He's even had his first trip on an airplane, courtesy of U.S. immigration officials. He's joining an estimated 10,000-plus other young migrants in federal custody, waiting for the government to decide what to do with them.
Aunque me dijo que estaba cansado, pero está bien.
She says he's tired, but fine. At least he's not being held at the border anymore. Veronica's been there, in the cells that migrants call iceboxes. But now a new chapter begins, another wait, to see when Vladdy can leave Florida. Nearly 2 weeks pass with Vladdy in Florida. It's almost Christmas. Vladdy calls Veronica from the shelter. They speak twice a week, 10 minutes each call.
Hello?
Hola, hijo, ¿cómo está?
Mal.
¿Por qué?
Tengo 3 días de estar enfermo.
Vladdy's sick, says he's achy, feels like he's got a fever. I ask Vladdy how many kids are there with him.
Supuestamente hay más de 1,000.
Más de 1,000.
More than 1,000. Does he know the name of the shelter?
Shelter.
No, pero digo el nombre completo.
Pues no sé, yo lo por shelter lo conozco.
Shelter, he says. I said, no, that's shelter in English. Do you know the name of the shelter? No, he says he doesn't. I ask him how long some of the other teens have been there.
¿Y conoce a muchachos allá que han tenido cuánto tiempo allá? ¿Que han llevado cuánto tiempo?
Pues aquí hay unos que tienen 4 meses.
4 months. Vladdy says he's meeting kids detained for 4 months. Then Vladdy's case manager wants to talk to Veronica.
Hola, buenos días. ¿Cómo
está? She tells Veronica, good news. They just need her fingerprints and she's done with the background check for reuniting with Vladdy. But bad news. Veronica has to go to Los Angeles tomorrow to get fingerprinted.
Oh, my God.
Veronica's eyes fill with tears. It seems like a blip. Just go to L.A. and get fingerprints. But it's a big deal. Veronica barely has any money, so she needs to take a Greyhound overnight from Oakland to L.A., about 11 hours. She'll do that so she doesn't have to pay for a hotel. But she's also supposed to have her monthly check-in with immigration officials tomorrow in San Francisco. So she has to be in two places at once.
Sí, voy.
Sí, voy, she says. Yes, I'll go. So Veronica took this really long bus trip overnight to L.A. to be fingerprinted. Incredible story. I've got so many questions. Let me turn to reporter Monica Campbell herself to talk about what happened. And Monica, there is a late-breaking update to Vladdy's story, which you'll tell us about in a moment. But just picking up the ball with when the government got Veronica's fingerprints, did they then release Vladdy?
No, they didn't. It actually kind of continued like that for several more weeks. In fact, it seemed that every time I checked in with Veronica, there was another document or bit of information that the government was requesting from her. For example, they wanted a picture of the house that she was staying in, there that she is staying in Pinole, just north of San Francisco, because it wasn't showing up on the GPS reader on the government side. So she, you know, scrambles, gets a photo, sends the photo, and it just seemed like that was the norm week after week. And I would like to note that the government also required that the American couple that she's living with also had to get fingerprinted kind of late in the game. And that was something that was unexpected because apparently not everybody has to be fingerprinted in the household these days, but it's unsure how that policy plays out.
Monica, you mentioned that Vladdy is one of 10,000 kids in U.S. custody right now. So are there 10,000 variations on Vladdy's story? Like, are there ways in which you'd say Vladdy is pretty typical?
Yeah, it's one story, but in some ways, I think Vladi's story does represent a lot of what we see, you know, that these kids face who are in detention, in federal custody. They've got loved ones in the United States who are going through all the hoops and trying to hustle and make reunification happen as quickly as possible. At the same time, in this particular case, Veronica has a pending asylum case, so she is protected from deportation to an extent. Mm. I'm thinking about a lot of kids in detention and shelters who have parents or loved ones who are completely undocumented and don't have an asylum case pending, who may be fearful of the U.S. immigration officials getting their information and possibly then facing deportation themselves. So it's incredibly tricky, and a lot of families are facing really hard decisions about what to do when kids are in detention.
You've reported on migration and detention and family separation for years, Monica. In this reporting, were there things that you learned or that struck you in a different way?
Yeah, I was really struck following Veronica's day-to-day wait for her son. I'm a new parent, and I couldn't imagine, you know, parenting through such an extreme circumstance, putting your kid on a path that, you know, maybe, you know, she says is the best thing for him in the long run. But that journey was so unpredictable. Just seeing Veronica sitting by her and watching that roller coaster and feeling it through her was incredible. I had never experienced that in all my years of immigration reporting, just the day-to-day tedium and stress. Mm. And I was really grateful for Veronica allowing me to kind of be with her through this process.
And you worked on Vladi and his mom Veronica's story for months, but last night there was a very last-minute update, right?
Right. Veronica called, and by the end of today, Vladi and his mom will be reunited. She got word he's flying into L.A., and it's going to be, you know, more of a roller coaster, but, you know, I'll definitely keep you guys updated.
Still, what a great conclusion to a really tough story. Wishing them both a happy reunion and a happy future. And The World's Monica Campbell, thanks to you for telling their story.
Thank you.
That was The World's Monica Campbell. Her story, The Boy in the Caravan, was produced in partnership with PBS Frontline's podcast, The Frontline Dispatch.